भगवान् स्वयं उदासीना भावितं वान् The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Swayam Bhagavan, taught Brahma and made himself realized. Purport. The English maxim that God helps those who help themselves is also applicable in the transcendental realm. There are many instances in revealed scriptures of the personality of Godhead's acting as the spiritual master from within. He was the spiritual master who instructed Brahma, the original living being, in the cosmic creation. When Brahma was first created, he could not apply his creative energy to arrange the cosmic situation. At first, there was only sound vibrating, the word tapa, which indicates the acceptance of hardships for spiritual realization. Refraining from sensual enjoyment, one should voluntarily accept all sorts of difficulty for spiritual realization. This is called tapasya. An enjoyer of the senses can never realize God, godliness, or the science of theistic knowledge. Thus, when Brahma initiated by Sri Krishna, by the sound vibration tapa, engaged himself in acts of austerity, by the pleasure of Vishnu, he was able to visualize the transcendental world, Sri Vaikuntha, through transcendental realization. Modern science can communicate using material discoveries such as radio, television, and computers, but the science invoked by the austerities of Sri Brahma, the original father of mankind, was still more subtle. In time, material scientists may also know how we can communicate with the Vaikuntha world. Lord Brahma inquired about the potency of the Supreme Lord and the personality of Godhead, answered his inquiry in the following six consecutive statements. These instructions, which are reproduced in the Srimad Bhagavatam, were imparted by the personality of Godhead, the spiritual master. What we're about to read is the nutshell verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which means the essence of the entire 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam is condensed into these six verses that Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is about to speak. And you will all be held responsible to memorize these six verses. English, and you will be held to the English and recommended to learn the Sanskrit. These are the verses that were spoken by Lord Narayan when he rewarded Lord Brahma with his transcendental darshan after Lord Brahma performed tapasya. Here it is explained that the way in which the disciple realizes the transcendental knowledge, which is coming through the sound vibration of the spiritual master, is through tapasya. Krishna explains in the Gita that there's jnana, which means theoretical knowledge, and there's vijnana, which is realized knowledge. Or in the Gita, it's explained, pariprasnana sevaya. We inquire submissively. Through that inquiry, the transcendental sound vibration enters into our heart. But then, it is through tapasya. Service and tapasya are identical to one another. In Krishna consciousness, we understand that service means to act according to the will of Guru and the will of Krishna, not considering our own likes or dislikes. And that is the very definition of tapasya. Tapasya means to be willing to accept or endure any type of inconvenience for the sake of pleasing Guru and Krishna, which is the means of spiritual advancement. And of course, in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, it is said, Tapo divyam putra gayena sattvam sudyajasyam brahma sukhyam phanantam, which means this human form of life is specifically meant for the purpose of tapasya. That means to discipline our lives, to even accept hardships for the sake of self-realization. And Tapo divyam putra gayena sarvam. This is very significant. It says human life is meant for hardship, for self-realization, which means most of the things we do in our Krishna consciousness are going to be things that we wouldn't ordinarily want to do. The nature, the tendency of the self, of the mind, is to want to simply satisfy the senses through selfish enjoyment. Tapasya means no. No more satisfying your senses. Service toward Krishna's senses. And these six verses of the Bhagavatam should be heard very carefully. Jnanam paramaguyame yad vijnana samanvitam sarahasyam tarangam chakrihana garitam maya. Please hear attentively what I shall speak to you, for transcendental knowledge about me is not only scientific, but also full of mysteries. Yavanaham yata bhavo yadrupa gunakaramaka tathaiva tatva vijnanam astu te madanugrahat. By my causeless mercy, be enlightened in truth about my personality, manifestations, qualities, and pastimes. Now, these next four verses are the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. The two that we have just read actually are the Lord's introduction to that. Aham evasam evagre nanya yat sadat asparam paschad aham yat etach cha yo vashishyeta somyaham. Prior to the cosmic creation, only I exist, and no phenomena exist, either growth, gross, subtle, or primordial. After creation, only I exist in everything. And after annihilation, only I remain eternally. Rate ratam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidyat atmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamah. What appears to be truth without me is certainly my illusory energy, for nothing can exist without me. It is like a reflection of a real light in the shadows, for in the light there are neither shadows nor reflections. Yatha mahanti bhutani bhuteshu chavacheshvanu pravishthani apravishthani tathateshu nateshvaham. As the material elements enter the bodies of all living beings and yet remain outside them all, I exist within all material creations and yet am not within them. Etavad eva jigyasyam tatva jigyasunatmana anvaya vyatirekhabhyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvada. A person interested in transcendental knowledge must therefore always directly and indirectly inquire about it to know the all-pervading truth. So, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, being the postgraduate study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishnadas Kaviraj begins his Chaitanya Charitamrita in the first chapter by citing the very essence, the summary substance of the Bhagavatam given by Lord Sri Krishna himself. And these are quite long purports, but we should study them very carefully for the next couple of days. What we would like is that each devotee is able to memorize these four verses and a
explain them according to Prabhupada's purports. Just as we read every day from the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and every day somebody is assigned, each and every one of you are assigned. We're going to read this, we're going to extract the essence out of the purport, we must take notes. We're going to ask each of you the day after tomorrow to cite these four verses and give us a small description of what each of them mean. Okay? Purport to the first verse. Aham.
51,
56. Aham means I. Therefore, the speaker who is saying aham, I, must have his own personality. The Mayavadi's philosophers interpret this word aham as referring to the impersonal Brahman. These Mayavadis are very proud of their grammatical knowledge. But any person who has actual knowledge of grammar can understand that aham means I, and that I refers to a personality. Write that down. This is a very excellent argument, because when you talk to the Mayavadis, they're all going to say this, that when Krishna says aham, he means the impersonal. Prabhupada, through this very simple, undefeatable answer, defeats that. Just like Prabhupada, when he first came to America in 1965, he was reading, he had no Bhagavad Gita, so he was reading Dr. Radha Krishna's Bhagavad Gita. And in that, it is Man Mana Bhava Mad Bhakto Mad Yajim Man Namaskuru Mami Vaishasi Shatyante Prati Jani Priyo. Krishna says, always think of me, worship me, offer your homage to me, become my devotee, and this way you will come to me without fail. And then Prabhupada, he would never read the purports. He would only use the translations. He would never read the purports, but for this one he read the purports. And he said, the beginning of the purport is when Krishna says me, he doesn't mean him as Krishna. He means me as the unmanifest, invisible, impersonal Brahman within him. Prabhupada, after reading it, actually became angry. He said, what is this nonsense? If he meant the unmanifest impersonal within him, why didn't he say that? Why is he saying me? When Krishna says me, that means me, Krishna. It's all word jugglery. So he's saying the same thing here. Krishna says, aham evasam evagre. That means prior to the cosmic creation, only I exist and no phenomena exists, either gross or subtle. After creation, only I exist in everything. And after annihilation, only I remain eternally. So the Mayavadi philosophies, they interpret that aham refers to the impersonal Brahman. And they're very, very expert at juggling words in such a way. But any person who has knowledge of Sanskrit grammar, or any type of grammar, can understand that aham means I. And if Krishna says I, he means I. Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, let us understand that everyone accepts that the Mahabharata was written for the less intelligent Vaishyas, Shudras, and Brahmabandhu, fallen Brahmins and women. This is widely accepted by all the scholars, that Mahabharata was meant for this class of people. And Bhagavad Gita is the essence within the Mahabharata. So when Krishna says, Man Mana Bhava Mad Bhakto, if he's talking to these types of people through Arjuna, Why would he do it in a mysterious way? When he says, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, I am the source of all creation, why nowhere, anywhere in the Gita, does he say, when I mean the impersonal Brahman is the source? Worship the impersonal Brahman. Nowhere in the Gita does that said, anywhere. Always I am the source of everything. Mattas parataram nanyat kinchid asti dananjaya. There is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls on a string and a thread. Throughout Gita, sarva dharman purit yaja mam ekam shiranam purusha. Aham tvam sarva papi bhyomokshe. Abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. If Krishna meant something impersonal within him, why doesn't he ever say it, even one time? On the contrary, he says, Brahmanohi pratishta aham, which means I am the source and basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is the source of joy. So therefore, these interpretations based on word jugglery and indirect meaning are the confusion that is created by the Mayavadis. When Krishna says I, he means Krishna. When Krishna says me, he means Krishna. Therefore, Prabhupada named Bhagavad Gita as it is. That is specifically why he said as it is. When Krishna says me, he means him. That's as it is. Aham has a specific meaning. It is not a vague term that can be whimsically interpreted. Aham, when spoken by Krishna, refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and nothing else. To prove the supremacy of the Personality of Godhead is throughout the Bhagavad Gita, throughout the Bhagavatam. There's one scholar, yogi, whatever, jnani, he's given 500 discourses in the Bhagavad Gita. Each one, I think, 7 days? Yes. He's given 500 7-day discourses on the Bhagavad Gita. And in practically every other page, Krishna is saying, me and I, surrender to me. There's no truth superior to me. I am the source of all that exists. And still, every class, he's interpreting it. When Krishna says I, he means not him, not Krishna. They minimize Krishna. Krishna shows his universal form just to show his supremacy, and yet they put Krishna in the background of the Bhagavad Gita. The instructions are what's important, not Krishna. Actually, you are Krishna, I am Krishna, we're all Krishna. This is all nonsense. Naham prakasha saravasya yoga maya samavrata mudo yam navijanati loka mama jamavir. For those who are foolish and unintelligent, Krishna says, I cover their eyes with the curtain of yoga maya. They cannot understand things as they are. The Bhagavad Gita is a simple scripture. It's clear as day. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was speaking the Vedanta Sutra with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was doing the same thing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that the Vedanta Sutra is clear as the noonday sun, but your interpretations are like a dark cloud completely obscuring the real meaning. When Prabhupada first came to America, there was over 100 English translations of the Bhagavad Gita, and not a single one of them taught devotion to Krishna. And what is Bhagavad Gita about? It's nothing but devotion to Krishna. Every single commentator simply twisted. One commentator, every verse, he translated in such a way, what this means is you should perform this technique called transcendental meditation and understand that you are one with the Supreme Being. Where does it say that? There's not even a reference to that in the Gita. Therefore, Prabhupada, he couldn't, with a conscious mind, recommend his disciples to read any translation of the Gita, because they were all full of word jugglery and speculation. Therefore, he wrote his own Bhagavad Gita as it is. I remember one lecture, Srila Prabhupada, he would get so angry when these people would say this. When Krishna says me or I, he means this. He would become so angry. He said, Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's words. If you want to speak if you want to speak your words, if you want to speak your speculations and your opinions, then you write your own book. But don't speak your nonsense in the name of Krishna. And then he screamed, don't poke your nose in another man's business. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's business to teach the world how to surrender to him. If you want to teach something else, I don't mind. But stay away from the Gita. You're ruining Krishna's name. You're misleading people in the name of God. Bhagavad Gita as it is, as Krishna spoke it. Srila Prabhupada says, I'm not giving any opinions or any interpretations. I'm simply speaking it as Krishna spoke it. Surrender to me means surrender to Krishna. And these big, big scholars, although they can give 500 discourses on Bhagavad Gita, when you challenge them in this way, they don't have an answer. They have no good answer. All they could do is go like this with their words. But when Krishna says, me, what is him? Oh, you're less intelligent. You're taking it too literally. This is very, very advanced philosophy, which must understand the deeper meaning behind. And I'm a great scholar, so I know. What is this deeper meaning behind? What was the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita? Arjuna surrendered to Krishna. Wasn't it? Krishna told him to fight, and he fought for Krishna. He became a bhakta. The conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is Arjuna became a bhakta. He surrendered to Krishna. Anyone who says that Bhagavad Gita has any other goal except bhakti is simply, they're adulterating. They're mutilating the treasure of Krishna's teachings. And therefore, you will find when you are preaching in India, most people, they have been so misguided by these impersonalists. But you have to learn to defend the word of Krishna. When anyone would speak and challenge Prabhupada with this impersonal philosophy, he would become like Arjuna. He would become a ferocious warrior. It was like defending Krishna. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that Swarup Damodar Goswami, he would scream anybody who wrote any poems or any glorifications of the Lord before Lord Chaitanya was allowed to see it. Lord Chaitanya, he couldn't tolerate hearing anything impersonal. Mayavad. Impersonal is one thing, but Mayavad is another thing. Impersonal is just the glorification of Krishna's impersonal aspect. But Mayavad is a different thing. Mayavad is blasphemy of Krishna. And if there was any tinge, Swarup Damodar would become very angry. Why? Because it said to Lord Chaitanya to hear that Krishna's body is an illusion, that Krishna's body is temporary, that Krishna's personality is temporary, it is an illusion. It's an assault to Krishna. There's no difference between his body and his soul. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. There's a difference between our body and our soul, but for Krishna there is no difference. And therefore the words of the Mayavadis are actually like arrows being shot at the body of Krishna. And for devotees to hear this causes pain to their heart. They cannot tolerate hearing such things about the Lord of their life. Is there any questions in this matter? Srila Prabhupada, the impersonal idea, the Mayavad conception, is so powerful, so strong, that even after Prabhupada taught so strictly what is the Vaishnava conclusion, still at one point, I believe it was in 1971, during Janmashtami, the leaders of ISKCON, sannyasis, were preaching that Prabhupada was God. And most of the devotees of North America were there. This happened at New Vrindavan. They were preaching that actually Prabhupada saying like this, but what he really means, because they were influenced by the impersonalist books, the Mayavadi books, that actually we're all God. We're all one in essence. We're worshiping Krishna. This is just a temporary manifestation of Brahman. And by fixing our mind on this temporary manifestation, ultimately we become disciplined, we become purified in heart, and ultimately we go beyond that impersonal, that temporary manifestation, and enter into the essence of Krishna, and we become one. And then there's no need for the personality of Godhead any longer. They were preaching like this, and that actually Prabhupada was a temporary manifestation of the impersonal Brahman who had descended upon the earth to bring us all back to that realization. And they were preaching with force because they had so much Mayavad influence in their lives. When Prabhupada heard this, he became so angry. Where is this nonsense coming from? Why you are studying books outside of my own? You just read my books. Huh? And at that point, he personally wrote his pranam prayer. Usually acharyas don't write it for themselves. But he did it for the sake of his disciples. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Shunyabari Paschitadi Satarane. And he said to his disciples, along with Nama Om Vishnupadaya, which is the standard traditional pranam prayer for all gurus, he said, you chant this with it. And he wrote it. He wrote it out. And every time you bow down in the temple, you chant this prayer. And every kirtan, you chant this prayer. What does the prayer mean? That this great disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has come to the Western world to completely annihilate all impersonalism and voidism. Once and for all, he wanted to stomp this tendency out. Is it such a strong tendency? Yes?
I was still not very clear about the difference between impersonalism and Mayavad.
Mayavad is also impersonalism, but Mayavad is a step beyond. Impersonalism simply means, you see, you can be a Mayavad and an impersonalist. In the sense that all Mayavadis are impersonalists. But how are they impersonalists? They have an understanding of Krishna. And they deliberately explain that Krishna's body is Maya. That Krishna's body is an illusion. That Krishna's body is just a temporary manifestation. That ultimately we are all Brahman. We are all Krishna. Now, Brahmavad, see, within the impersonal school, there's Brahmavad and Mayavad. Brahmavad simply means a preliminary understanding of Krishna, to understand him in his impersonal aspect. To understand the impersonal Brahman and to worship that impersonal Brahman.
And how do they hold Krishna as?
They don't really discuss so much what is Krishna. It's like the four Kumars were Brahma bodies. And when they heard the story, when they heard the nectarian pastimes of Krishna, when they came in contact with the Tulsi leaves that were decorating his feet and smelled them, immediately they were prepared to become devotees. the Brahmavad is just the preliminary realization of the Absolute Truth. Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shakti. Brahman realization is Paramatma realization is Bhagavan realization. Brahmavadi is one who is aspiring for that Brahman realization. But a Mayavadi is one who says everything is Maya except Brahman. Everything with form, everything with personality is Maya. That's why they're called Mayavadis. The Jivatma is Maya. The Paramatma is Maya. Krishna is Maya. Everything except Brahman is Maya. It's all temporal. It's all illusion. That is offensive to a Vaishnava, to call Krishna an illusion. The Supreme Godhead, the source of everything, to call him an illusion. Huh? Yes?
How
do you explain
that such a long treatise be explained to somebody in just a space of 1 hour?
How to explain what?
How long treatise like the Bhagavad Gita be digested by somebody or spoken by somebody in the space of
1 hour?
An hour or so.
That's
time. So this first objection.
Well, let's go one at a time. That's the end of the first objection? ask him if he could reveal the universal form. Ask him how it's possible that Krishna could have all the soldiers and all living beings running into his mouth getting gnashed to death. Huh? Krishna is God. For Krishna, there's nothing impossible. If you accept there is a God, then you have to accept that God is not like you and me. God could speak all the Vedas in 5 minutes if he wants to. Huh? Krishna says, time I am, devouring all living beings. Krishna's he's talking about somebody who's controlled by time. How can you do it in this amount of time? Means you're controlled by time to do it in a certain way. But Krishna says, time I am. And he proves it by showing universal form. So Krishna is the controller of time. When Krishna danced with the gopis, he danced with them for one night of Brahma. But it was all contained within one night, according to the worldly standards. How do you explain that? There's only one way to explain it. That Krishna is God. He is the controller of time. He is the personification of eternal time. Someone who could speak such incredibly wise transcendental words is not like you and me. What is next? Are you all satisfied with that answer? David Reed?
Actually, also, I think it took only an hour, the actual conversation.
That's what his question is. How would it happen in Malawi?
How is it possible he could have done it?
How long does it take to chant the chanting verses? It actually physically takes only an hour to really chant. And he was speaking.
But that's not
a mundane viewpoint.
But that's not a good. We don't want to get on the mundane viewpoint with that. Krishna, if you get in the mundane viewpoint, then you'll get to the 11th chapter and it'll say, how did Krishna do this? Huh? Krishna can do anything. That's why the Bhagavad Gita has authority. If Krishna was like you and me, it would have no authority. It's the absolute truth because it's spoken by the absolute truth. Until you convince a person that Krishna is beyond the material world, that Krishna is eternal time personified, that he's the absolute truth, unless you convince a person of that, then the words of the Gita are just another philosopher's words. Right? We don't accept the Gita as another philosopher's words. Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. And it has to be taken as a song of God, otherwise it becomes meaningless.
Is there anywhere mentioned that Gita is spoken 1 hour? Is there anywhere it is mentioned?
Prabhupada said it was spoken half hour. Go on. Tell that man that the sun is closer than the moon, too. Go on.
The Bhagavad Gita was interpolated afterwards.
What?
The Bhagavad Gita was spoken in some nutshell verses were spoken.
Yes, that's the 10th chapter. There are 4 nutshell verses for the Gita and 10 nutshell or 4 nutshell verses in the Bhagavatam. And both begin with aham. The first nutshell verse of the Gita is aham sarvasya prabhavo mat sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanyata. That I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. And the nutshell verse, the first nutshell verse of the Bhagavatam is Aham evasam evagre nanyad yat sad asat param paschid aham yat etachcha yo visheshyeta so smyaham. Prior to the cosmic creation, only I exist. No phenomena exist, either gross, subtle, or primordial. After existent creation, only I exist in everything. And after annihilation, only I remain eternally. What is your second question?
What he was really saying was that only these 4 verses were spoken by Krishna to Arjuna, and someone else has written these 700 words later on.
That's what he said.
Explained, yeah.
Elaboration.
Where, what is his authority to say this? Ask him, what is your authority? Who is the historian? Anyone could say historian. What is his evidence? Historian must have evidence. Ask him, what is your evidence? We want to see evidence. Why should we take your word for it? You can tell him that I'm your father. He's going to want to know your evidence, right? I don't need any evidence. This is all nonsense. He has no evidence. Huh? Krishna, the evidence is coming through parampara. Evam parampara praptam idam rajashayavati. You know why they say like that? Because if they take the rest of the Bhagavad Gita, they're completely defeated. At every step. Even in those 4 verses, they're totally defeated. Therefore, you have to tell him that this tad vijnanartham su gurum eva abhigacchate. If you want to understand Veda, you must understand through an acharyan disciple succession. Not through historians, not through scholars, but through self-realized souls. That is the only way to understand the Vedas. Otherwise, you are sure to be bewildered. Just like one, Prabhupada was not very favorable toward the Aryan Samaj. Because they're really against deity worship, according to the lectures I've heard of Prabhupada personally through tapes and in his books. In one lecture I remember I was sitting and Prabhupada was saying, the Arya Samaj, they are against the worship of the deity. He said one time when Arya Samaji approached him, and Prabhupada was preaching, and he was preaching Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayashchati. That offer me a leaf, flower, little fruit or water, and I will accept it. And this man said to Prabhupada, God doesn't eat. How can you say that God eats? This is impossible. We do not accept that God eats. You are offering it to an idol, but God is not eating through that idol. God does not eat. And Prabhupada answered by saying, Krishna says in Gita, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayashati. Krishna says, I eat. You say he doesn't eat. So who am I going to believe? Krishna or a loafer like you? Bhagavad Gita as it is, that is the great gift of Prabhupada to the world.
What is the origin of this impersonal, this Mayavad?
The origin?
Where it came, first place.
Since time immemorial, man has always, in this material world, wanted to take the position of being the enjoyer, being God, trying to put himself one with God. It is the envious tendency of the soul which to want to enjoy God's creation. And it's really the ultimate extent of sense gratification, to become God. Of course, Sripad Shankaracharya, although he was the most exalted Vaishnava, Lord Shiva, he propagated this Mayavad philosophy. But he also propagated devotion to Krishna. He propagated the Mayavad philosophy, but then at the end of his life, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Dhamate, Samprapte, Nahi Nahi Rakshatim, Dikri Karana. Worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda, you mudhas, you rascals. All this word jugglery that I have taught you will not save you at the time of death. But do you know how the Mayavadis, they're so expert at juggling words. You know how they juggle those words? There's Vajra Govindam, Vajra Govindam, Vajra Govindam, Mudamate. That means all the fools and rascals, they should worship Govinda. And the Shankaracharya, in his beautiful explanation, in his introduction to Bhagavad Gita, beautiful, beautiful glorification of Govinda. In fact, Srila Prabhupada personally wrote a whole commentary on that. It's a beautiful glorification of Govinda. So the heart of Shankaracharya was purest, highest level Vaishnava. But he had a mission. He had two missions simultaneously. One was to reestablish the Vedic authority after Lord Buddha discarded the authority of the Veda. And the two, as it is explained, he explains to Parvati, Padma Purana, that I will come in a form of a Brahmin to teach a veiled form of Buddhism, to activate the influence of Kali Yuga. In one sense, he was preparing for the coming of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just like Narada Muni. He was acting like Narada Muni. He was stirring things up just to bring about the descent of the Lord.
How does Shankaracharya explain Aham Sarvasya Bhagavan in his solitary?
It's better that we. It's not very important that we study the words. What?
You mentioned that it gives a description of Lord Krishna Govinda. What book?
Gita.
His introduction.
Shankara Bhashya.
Gita Bhashya.
Beginning. His introduction to the Gita. See, beautiful prayers and glorification of Govinda. And also in his translation, in his commentary of Gita, he says Narayano Paro Vyaktat, which means Narayan is beyond this material creation. But the Mayavad philosophy is everything is, he says Narayan is transcendental and beyond this material creation. But the Mayavad philosophy in itself says that anything with form or name is temporary and part of this Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya. The whole universe is illusion, only Brahma is truth. So the words Narayana Paro Vyaktat completely contradict that whole subject matter.
These prayers by Shankaracharya are listed in Science of Self-Realization.
You should get that, we'll read it. Not right now, but...
It's also that Krishna and Arjuna, they are on a very isolated place when the Bhagavad Gita was being discussed. And Sanjay was on the other side, very far away. He was giving this message to Dhritarashtra. And it was Sanjay who has completely translated full Bhagavad Gita. What is the proof that he might have not interpreted here and there?